Bing bong. I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got my good friend, the Wayfaring Bitcoiner, Dan. So if you guys have been following me from the beginning, first off, thank you for coming on this journey with me. Second off, you guys have maybe wondered why Dan left. You know, what kind of happened with that whole situation? Are we still friends? What kind of happened? We're still good. We still can shoot the shit and talk all the time. So we talk a little macro, a little jobs, and much, much more. Of course, we talk Bitcoin as well. So tune in for another action-packed episode. Also, big shout out to my sponsor down in Austin, Texas. We got Pleb Lab, the number one hacking space in the country, in the world, in America, global, Earth, maybe even the solar system. I don't fucking know. But they got the number one hacking space. If you want to be a hacker in the Bitcoin space, you need to make a trip down to Austin and check them out. If you can't, they have plenty of resources and courses that you can take on their website. Just go to pleblab.com and take their Nostr Dev course. You can purchase all this from the OSHI app, get some sats back, help support the cause. All right. Also, last thing, this is not financial advice. Everything you hear from Wayfaring and myself is not financial advice. All right, enough from me. Hit that subscribe button, 5-star rating, and let's get into the show. Whoosh. Bing bong. I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got a very special guest, my former co-founder who got shit canned from Green Candle, the Wayfaring Bitcoiner. Wayfaring, man, how you doing today, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, dude. I'm good. All right, dude. Let's hop right in. Let's dive right in. We'll talk about how you got shit canned from Green Candle a little bit later, but let's dive right into the jobs data, dude. There's been a lot of reports out there that have come in with the jobs numbers extremely high. Just overall, like, kind of macro environment, right? We've seen the Fed consistently raise interest rates to, you know, at a all-time high pace. Interest rates are just skyrocketing. Fed, as our Jerome Powell has said, higher for longer. And it's affecting the jobs, allegedly, but not on paper. So what do you think of all these job reports? The CPI is coming out tomorrow. We're recording this on the 11th. So just, like, overall view of the data that's being reported out now by, you know, our wonderful government here in the United States.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see the hat. It says end the Fed. I don't know what kind of video quality you have over there, but yeah, I got the end the Fed hat on. I've been wearing it around. I've actually gotten a lot of like nods of approval. I've only had one person tell me that they like the hat, but I see a lot of people read it and then give me the nod. So I think a lot of us are on the same page with this. When it comes to the job numbers, I think most of the job numbers are fake. I don't think that a lot of these companies are actually hiring people. I think just in my experience on the job market, it's been a lot of, apply to a bunch of jobs, immediately get, denials. And so a lot of them, I'm wondering if they're even real or if they're strictly internal hires. I don't think a lot of companies right now are hiring people, especially not, higher paid positions. And I'm not talking super high paid. Like I could probably walk down the street to any retail outlet and get a job working as like a salesperson or something, but I don't think that a lot of the higher paid positions are actually being filled. I think that these companies are just posting them to post them.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% as well, but I want to get to the data here later, but I kind of want to present my theory to you and see if you maybe agree or disagree or what. But I think, you know, exactly like you're saying, the lower paying jobs, maybe entry level jobs, are still hiring. You know, maybe they'll get somebody fresh out of college that they could pay for, you know, half the price as somebody who's maybe middle, 5 to 10 years experience, maybe not exactly C-suite level. And then, you know, the C-suite level guys are always going to be okay because, you know, there's always going to be a need. But that middle, kind of like the millennial generation that both of us are in, are the ones that are getting screwed. And I think that's where, you know, we're seeing a lot of layoffs for, you know, I mean, anecdotally, my friends and other people as well that I know that are getting, you know, laid off in their companies, and they're having a difficult time trying to find another job. So, you know, do you kind of feel that same way where it's like, you know, maybe the middle guy that's here getting screwed?
Yeah, and I, the problem too is that we had, you know, a decade of it being very easy to get a well-paying job, and so we set our lives up around, you know, like I know a little bit about your personal situation and my personal situation. Like, I bought a house in January and then got laid off a few months afterwards. So like, we've set our lives up around the idea that, oh, even if I lose my job, I should be able to find one. Like, I'm a skilled worker. I've had no problem getting jobs in the past. So we set our lives up around the idea that we should just be able to, you know, get jobs pretty quickly. But it turns out that's not necessarily the case. So yeah, like, how many people our age are in that position? And you're saying entry-level positions. Well, even now, people coming out of college, they're coming out with a massive amount of student loan debt, and we've got inflation running wild. So being able to afford rent, being able to afford groceries, being able to afford gas, like, a lot of these entry-level jobs have to be pretty high paying for these people to have a decent living. So yeah, it's an interesting situation. And in my opinion, the Fed is in a hard spot right now. It's like, they keep raising rates, these companies are going to have a harder time hiring. And if they lower rates, we're going to get runaway inflation. So yeah, I don't know. Like, long term, it's tough to say. I think we need to go back to being an economy that produces goods and services rather than being an economy that thrives on a money printer being turned on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, kind of how we started this Green Candle, well, I'll throw it back a little bit, was a lot of on our like data analysis side, right? We were like looking at, you know, Fed data. We were looking at, you know, companies' financials. We were looking at, you know, Bitcoin specific kind of data as well. But, you know, one thing that I've learned in my entire time of being like, you know, I guess around the data field is that if you want to find something in this data, you most likely can. And data can be very easily manipulated. And the story behind the data is more valuable than maybe the data itself. So, you know, I guess when the Fed and like all these, you know, the government officials kind of get in front of people and tell everybody that everything's okay, and they're presenting these numbers, it seems like, maybe it's just the echo chamber of Bitcoin Twitter or whatnot, but it seems like everybody's starting to realize, like, all right, these numbers are full of shit. And that's, you know, basically where we're at. So, you know, one, like, why do you think that they keep manipulating these numbers? And two, do you think that, I guess, people are starting to wake up, or do you still think that, you know, it's maybe just the echo chamber of Bitcoin Twitter that has kind of taught us, like, hey, you know, don't trust, but verify, right?
Yeah, I think, well, people are gonna, like, you can only lie to them about so many things, right? Like, when they're seeing things with their own eyes, and then you're on TV telling them that it's the exact opposite, they start to wake up, whether you're into Bitcoin or not. Like, a lot of my close friends here have no idea that I'm in Bitcoin at all. I've kind of stopped telling people because I think we're getting to that point in the timeline where you need to safeguard everything that you have from every potential threat. And so there's a lot of people that have no idea that I'm into Bitcoin here, and they all they do is talk about inflation, and they talk about how the job numbers are bullshit. And so yeah, I think people are waking up to it. Why they're trying to do this on TV, I mean, they're just trying to control a narrative. They, you know, I think they're getting a little arrogant with what they can get away with. And they obviously have no problem. Look, they're either completely incompetent and they believe the things that they're saying on TV, or they're complete liars. Either way, it's a nightmare scenario for the US and our economy. So, like, you get to pick. Are they incompetent or are they liars?
To be honest, I think that they're liars. If you really want my honest opinion, yeah, on all of it, I think that they're, you know, a lot smarter than people put out to be, and that they, you know, they put a lot of thought into every word that they say when they go out in front of people. And sure, like, you know, I think maybe it's a little tough and that they're not reading off the script, but I think that they've been lying to us for a long time, and that, you know, now it's just even more evident with things like Twitter, now X, or whatever you want to call it, like social media, the clips just always floating and circulating around. Like, more people are paying attention. And I think, you know, more people are just noticing from like gas prices and everything else too. So, you know, as far as, I guess, the overall consumer goes, is there something that, I guess, like, really, like a statistic out there that really seems to worry you? Because, you know, I look at, You know, I'll just list off a few, right? Credit card debt at a near all-time high, personal savings at near or at an all-time low, student loan payments about to start opening up, right? And then we got, you know, this other war, like not only Ukraine-Russia, but the Israeli war going on over there as well, which is add another layer to all of this. So, you know, as far as the consumer goes, it seems like Walmart reported a very low consumer spending report just recently. So, you know, it seems like everybody on the FinTwit side of things is like the consumer's all fine and dandy because, you know, everybody's got a high paying job. These job numbers are fine and everything like that. But, you know, on the Bitcoin side of things, everything's like about to burn and, you know, we're about to have World War III. So, you know, where do you kind of lie in this scale? And, let's hear it.
Well, on Twitter, I'm a toxic maxi. So I don't follow any of these. I follow very few of these FinTwit accounts, so I don't get the other half of it. So yeah, in my opinion, Rome is burning danger. I don't know. Like you were saying, credit card debt, is it an all-time high or it's like the highest it's been since 2001 or something?
Yeah.
Personal savings are way down. Repossessions are way up. I follow the auto industry pretty closely for a number of reasons. I know that a lot of these used car retailers are basically going out of business. I know I've kind of heard some rumblings that CarMax is in trouble. So Carvana has been laying people off left and right. A number of the major ones across the country have completely shut down operations. So I don't know what people are going to do, especially going into the holiday season. Like it's going to get pretty rough, man. Like going into winter, and people can't afford the things that they need. I could see things getting pretty rough pretty quickly. So, you know, my advice to everybody is prepare yourself as best as possible. I don't want to be doom and gloom, but I just don't see how, you turn this around other than turning the money printers back on. And then when it comes to global affairs, like that to me just tells me that they're kind of prepping to turn the money printers back on kind of under the guise of that. But in reality, it's because there's a lot of trouble domestically too, that they've just kind of been lying about. But yeah, I don't know. I like to say I don't know too many people, but I'm kind of in an echo chamber even personally. Just, you know, that happens because of the people that you tend to hang around with. They typically have shared interests. So I don't know many people that haven't woken up to this. But we'll see. You still have people like Paul Krugman, right, on Twitter that are tweeting like, oh, inflation's under control, we defeated it. It's like, yeah, but if that's only if you remove rents, remove, you know, gas, remove energy, what is it, remove energy, food, and shelter, then it's under control. It's like
everything you need to live, basically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you walk out of your house at this point and you're spending $100, it seems like, right? I mean, with gas the way it is, food as expensive as it is, I mean, it's just like, it's insane. But, you know, I hear you. I think like, person at least that I'm hanging out with too is waking up. Oh, fuck you, Siri.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Whoops.
We have a third wheel here.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, you know, I kind of went around like the beach, and maybe I'll release these videos sometime later, but went around the beach and I asked people, you know, what is inflation and what is money? And majority of people that I asked had no idea like what inflation is caused by. And, you know, they couldn't really answer what money is other than, you know, some of them got like the medium of exchange, some sort of like aspect of that. But the inflation answers, most of them are like, I don't know, we aren't taught that in school and other things. So, you know, I think people are maybe waking up to the fact that, you know, things are a little bit more, I guess, like more expensive just because they're seeing less money in their bank account. But I don't know if they're really questioning why. Back to kind of a similar or to a point that you made there about like the money printer. I've recently had Tom Luongo on the Macro Insights podcast. So shameless plug here. If you listen to this one, you want a little bit more of the macro. I get some non-Bitcoiners that kind of give that lens. But his theory is like based on Tom Luongo's that, you know, they've essentially tried to this fucking Siri thing keeps turning on. But that they've been essentially trying to like destroy the offshore dollar market, raise interest rates at a miraculous pace in order to kill off everybody else like economically. Whereas, you know, the war with Russia and like everything else is more of like an energy specific war. So the US is pulling the lever of the monetary policy while everybody else is pulling the lever of like the energy, right? And at the end of the day, like, energy is probably going to win. But, you know, Powell is doing what he can to try to, you know, defeat the globalists, so to speak, and, you know, kind of make the US more self-sustaining. Now, he's already made it through, like, I guess, a lot of the Ukraine, Russia, conflict, war, whatever you want to call it, without sending, you know, a lot of money or going through QE. You know, obviously, we've sent money, we've sent, you know, ammunition, we've sent like kind of like older military equipment. And we've done that so far through Russia and Ukraine. So I guess just playing devil's advocate here, like, obviously, we just started this, or this Israeli conflict just started here. But there is maybe an alternative view that Jerome Powell kind of keeps his foot down, although we'll have some political pressures from, you know, the Biden administration and everything else. But it seems like they're already kind of out the door. Maybe, I don't know, maybe if everything's not rigged, I'm not really sure. But, you know, just looking at that kind of perspective, do you kind of, I guess, could you see an alternative path where, you know, essentially Powell is just keeping his foot down and trying the best he can in order to, you know, keep the dollar as strong as it is?
Yeah, they definitely could. I mean, they either go up or go down, right? Or they stay flat. So I could see any of it, really. It's all trade-offs. So that's the thing. If they do decide to keep raising rates, like, the jobs situation is going to get much worse here. The personal credit situation is going to get much worse here. The personal savings situation is going to get much worse here. I think we'll see a bunch of defaults on mortgages. So they could. I just think it'll be disastrous domestically. And whatever that means. Like, here's the other thing about Powell. Like, Powell was appointed by Trump and is still appointed under Biden. Like, this is the other, you should ask people on the beach if they know anything about the Federal Reserve, if they know that the people that control all of the monetary policy in our country are unelected officials. Like, nobody knows that. So they could. I don't know. I just think it'd be disastrous. And yeah, we'll see. And like, the other thing is, what does Powell care if Powell gets kicked out tomorrow? Well, like, what does he care? The dude's like a billionaire, right? So
I don't know, man. I think he like really thinks about his reputation, and he wants to go and like kind of be this Volcker kind of character that people look back to and say like he was a great quality chairman. I think he has kind of a big ego in that aspect of things. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong here. But the other aspect of it is the housing market, right? You talked about you bought a house in January this year. Well, housing is becoming more and more unaffordable, and the interest rates on housing now is, I think, the highest it's been since maybe like early 2000s. I put out a tweet. Yeah. So the 30-year mortgage now, the average rate is above 8%. Whereas, like, I don't know, I got my house, I've talked about this a couple of times, September 2020, my interest rate's under 3. So, and like, I think 60% of mortgages are either at 3% or under, or maybe it's 4. But either way, majority of your payment, you know, for those who don't know, is mostly your interest payment, right? I mean, you have the very little to principal, then you have the interest, insurance, whether you have PMI or not, you know, all the taxes, all those other kind of things. And so, yeah, I mean, that interest payment, or that interest essentially doubling for the average person, is making the same house maybe even double the price, maybe even on the monthly payment, maybe even a little bit more than that. So, you know, I guess on the overall housing situation, I've kind of talked about the, you know, the differences between commercial and like personal housing, where I think it's going to lie. And I can revisit that here in a second. But, you know, where do you kind of see, I guess, the overall housing market, just as like, you know, a homeowner, somebody who's kind of working on some things, you know, have you been able to peek around a little bit and see, you know, maybe some other homes in your market, just kind of some of the things that you're noticing?
Yeah, stuff around here. So I'm on the edge of a town that's expanding pretty quickly. So stuff around here, like, you see a lot of new builds. I've just following like semi closely in my direct area, the new builds are ridiculously expensive and they sit on the market. They don't move. Whereas the older houses, which is like, I bought a house that was built in the 70s. it's required a lot of work. I've done a lot of the work on my own, just because you can't afford to pay people to do it, because it's, you know, the prices now that people are asking, because material prices have gone through the roof, is just nuts. And I feel confident that I could do at least as good of a job as some of these people. So I've just been doing a lot of it on my own. So a lot of the older houses get scooped up pretty quickly, at prices that I think are reasonable for what they are. I've walked around a few, gone to a few open houses, and I think they're reasonable. I was fortunate. I found my house through a wholesaler. So I got a very good price on it, but I still had to get a mortgage, and the mortgage rates, like you were saying, are much higher than they were a few years ago. But the alternative, Brandon, is to be in an apartment where your rent is guaranteed to go up every year now. I mean, I've never met anybody who's had a rent go down ever. So, the alternative is you just stay stuck in a rent cycle where you're paying somebody else's mortgage, and it's ever increasing. And how many people built luxury apartments over the last 3 years? Who knows what their lending deal was? And if they had an adjustable rate, lending deal, then of course, your rent could go up a lot every year. So, it's tough around here. I'm not surprised, but I've been happy to see a lot of the houses I'm seeing around here are selling for about what I'd say they're worth, except for the new builds. The new builds are ridiculously expensive, and in my opinion, just aren't worth it based on what I've seen.
Yeah. So, I mean, my kind of theory on housing is that, the overall, personal, single family homes, maybe even 1 to 4 units, they'll be okay. They'll kind of stay steady, as you've kind of said, right? I mean, unless it's a new build where, somebody is kind of under on materials, right? We saw the lumber, all those kind of materials just skyrocket in 2020. Where I think is going to be a huge issue is commercial real estate, as you kind of mentioned, right? People building luxury apartments now where they need, they're on a variable rate. So a lot of these commercial buildings, they're kind of similar to the Canadian housing market. And I know I had an episode with Joey and Mark Heftovich a couple weeks ago, or maybe a couple months ago at this point. But, essentially they have a variable rate either on a 5 or 10 year term, usually on that 5 year term, and those things fluctuate, right? So the rates that these big commercial buildings have are probably going to go up here pretty soon, and they get valued by two things: by the occupancy and their overall rent flow. And so the banks, if these apartment buildings are starting to, having to lower rent in order to attract more people to move in, and are essentially under what their overall payments are every week, obviously that building is going to go devalue, and that overall loan is either going to get flipped. And if somebody can't afford that, like a mom and pop maybe, or maybe a smaller commercial real estate investing firm, those buildings are going to get scooped up by BlackRock. And not only that, it's not only the apartment buildings, but you got to think commercial office buildings, right? I mean, we've seen people flock away from places like San Francisco, LA, New York, Chicago, into places like Nashville, Austin, Florida, and some of these other states where, we're a little bit more open. And, not only that, did people flock there, these commercial buildings are still unoccupied. So we're seeing a lot of commercial buildings have 25 to 50% occupancy, and their rent had to be way low. So these companies that are renting these out got a good deal to rent out a floor or whatever it is, but the building's essentially going to go under, and somebody's going to have to scoop up that building for pennies on the dollar. So, if somebody has a lot of money sitting around like BlackRock, you'll see them probably start to scoop up a lot of these buildings in the downtown areas. And that's what I think is going to be a big, big catalyst for, this upcoming recession that everybody kind of foresees in the future, just because, we need as much as the Bitcoiners want to say that we can move out to the country and be self-sustaining that way, as it stands right now, we still kind of need some of those big cities. And, there's a lot of jobs in these areas. And if companies are flocking out of these cities, some people are going to be left with empty hands. And I think it's going to kind of all fall back on the consumer.
Yeah. It's a tough situation. One of the things I noticed in Nashville too, when I was there, was that people, like you said, all these people kind of flocked away from places like California and New York into Tennessee, especially the Nashville area. And I lived about 30 minutes outside of Nashville. So it was a decent ways away from the city, and the housing there was nuts because you had this huge influx of people. And of course they're selling, you know, a studio apartment in New York City and making $1 million and then coming to Nashville and buying a $250,000 house for $450,000, thinking, oh, you know, I'm remote now, I've got a great paying job. Well, then that person gets laid off. So they bought a house for double what it was worth. Then they get laid off. They've got a great mortgage, but they're not, now they don't have any income, right? And now if they want to get out of that house, they're thinking, man, I need to sell this thing for $400,000. Well, that's a $250,000 house. And the people that were in that local community before you moved here can't afford it, especially with interest rates the way that they are on mortgages. So I saw a lot of that. And I saw a lot of houses being on the market because I was looking in Nashville before I ended up moving to where I am now. And I saw a lot of houses sit on the market for months. And every 30 days, they would drop the price by $5,000. And it's like, you need to drop the price by $150,000 if you want anybody here to be able to afford it. So it's going to be interesting. And then, you know, like you were saying, a lot of these people that bought these properties, like on the commercial side, if they bought those properties in 2020, 2021, and they're on a 5-year ARM, and that adjustment comes in 2025, 2026, like things could start getting pretty hairy if they can't refinance. So, you know, I don't know, man. I'm pretty doom and gloom, but again, I am, like I said, I only follow Bitcoiners on Twitter, so I might just be in an echo chamber.
Yeah, and I mean, like, look, at the end of the day, like, doom and gloom gets people kind of like interested and tuned in, but I do think that, you know, the Fed and everybody in charge is going to, you know, as much as like, you know, people want to accelerate and get closer to a Bitcoin standard, I think, you know, the better path for, I guess, everybody involved is, you know, US dollar kind of hold on as long as it can. Then we have kind of a transition, whether it's, you know, the BRICS currency, or if, you know, RFK is somehow able to back the dollar by hard assets, or somebody else along those lines, you know, is able to do that. And we kind of have an in-between global reserve currency before getting to like maybe a Bitcoin standard, would be kind of like the best case scenario. Whereas, you know, if we get immediately to a Bitcoin standard or this current system fails, that's when, you know, you're going to have to hunker down and make sure you have like, you know, a freezer full of food, being very self-sustained and everything like that. And so, yeah, I mean, it seems like you're probably on the latter half of that, where you think, you know, you got to hunker down, right? You're on mute.
I'm muted, and I spilled coffee on myself. It's an absolute disaster. I switched to French press. So I've been like just readjusting to drinking hot coffee. I was drinking cold coffee for the last, I don't know, 2 years or something. But anyways, yeah,
you know, and the other guys where they're like talking there, and Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg are just chatting back and forth, and Will Ferrell goes on the rant on how he was like if he was a 600-pound tuna, he would hunt Mark Wahlberg as a lion. And Mark Wahlberg at the end just stands there and just picks up the hot coffee, just dumps it on him. That's how I imagine him sitting there.
Yeah, that's such a good movie. Now I've lost my Well, here's the thing, dude. I think even if we switch to some kind of international monetary standard, that should be absolutely terrifying to everybody, because the only way that they're going to be able to do it is to have it basically be like a CBDC. There's going to be, and then instead of the CB being the Federal Reserve, it's some international entity that you can't even get close to. So that should be terrifying. Even if we have that, you should have a freezer full of food, and you should be able to prepare. Like, you should know if you lose power for a week, like, how are you going to do things? Are you going to be, you know, are you going to starve to death? Are your neighbors going to like raid your place? You should know all of these things. So I think, you know, the faster you can figure that stuff out, the better, just because you never know how quickly things can collapse until they actually collapse. But yeah, I'm, like the Bitcoin standard is not going to happen as quickly as people want it to. Like all these other things, a collapsing economy, they're forcing functions towards it. But how long did it take you to figure out? How long did it take me to figure out like how to get Bitcoin, how to get it into cold storage, how to set up a multi-sig system, how to run your own node? It takes, you know, it's not like you can learn these things overnight. And then you certainly have, and then you have to source the materials. Like I need a signing device. You can make your own if you want, but then that's, you know, there's a learning curve there. How do you set up your own node? Like, again, huge learning curve. You have to source materials to do it. So, the Bitcoin standard is a pretty far way away. And again, on Bitcoin Twitter, we tend to be in a bit of an echo chamber and we think it's much closer just because we're only talking to other people that are already doing all of these things. You talk to people outside of, like I have a hard time talking to people about how it's better for you to pay with Cash App to a Square terminal because it's better for the merchant because they save 2.5% on a Visa fee. Because I think it's Cash App to Square terminals a 1% fee and Visa is a 3.5% or 4% fee. Like I have a hard time. I talk to merchants who have Square terminals and I say, what do you do to get people to use Cash App? And they say, what do you mean? There's a little Cash App thing there that they can scan. I was like, no, what are you as a merchant doing to incentivize them to use Cash App instead of a Visa card? And it's nothing. They're not doing anything and they don't understand why they should. So if people aren't even thinking about that, then like we've got a long ways to go to get people onto Bitcoin.
Well, I think, you know, I agree with you there. I think like, but eventually, you know, it's going to be more of a need more than kind of just trying to figure out or a want, you know, like that extra 2% that they could save from like the Cash App to Square transaction would be something that's like, hey, like if I don't save this 2% in my business or even like a 1%, like I'm going to go under, I'm going to lose my business. And so like usually people, that's when they start to hunker down and try to figure something like that out. Opposed to, you know, whereas, you know, now it's just like, all right, everything's still kind of okay. And maybe shit's not exactly hitting the fan just yet. But we've been very doom and gloom on this episode. But I want to bring it back, maybe some more jolly things. But let's bring it to Bitcoin, right? I mean, we do have a lot of building going on. We do have a lot of kind of companies kind of popping up. So I'll leave it kind of broad for you. You know, what is making you bullish going forward? And like, is there a specific company, maybe something that you're seeing? So I'll give you the why are you bullish kind of question here. So shout out to my guy, BTC Sessions.
Yeah, Ben Sessions. I'm most excited to see what Dorsey does. So Dorsey's kind of getting his hands dirty a bit. He's I think he just kind of took control, but I think he's now in charge of the things that are happening at Square. And so I'm excited to see what he does. I'd love to see some Lightning invoices come off of a Square terminal. And then I'd love to see, here's what I'd love to see. I want to go to a Square terminal and I want to be able to pay with any Bitcoin wallet of my choice. I want to be able to pay with Cash App, obviously. I'd also like to be able to pay with like Venmo. Or I don't use Venmo or Strike. Like I'd like to be able to pay with any of these. Strike's a hard example because it's also a Bitcoin wallet or a Lightning wallet. But like imagine Square Terminal issues a Lightning invoice and then I wanted to pay with Venmo. Like I could just scan the invoice and it could take out of my cash, convert it to Bitcoin, send it over Lightning, land in the merchant's wallet, reconvert it to cash. And then it's like, we should be able to do this. Like, this is crazy. We've got the Lightning Network. It's an open monetary network. Every company should be able to implement this and we should be able to have cross-platform payments. So I'm very bullish on Jack getting his hands dirty at Square. We'll see where that goes. I know he's been talking for a number of months now, both on Nostr and on, on X, formerly known as Twitter, about being able to issue Lightning invoices from Square terminals. I think the hardest part of this technically is they've already got Lightning enabled on Cash App, right? That's not a problem. They understand a bit of the infrastructure that you need to be able to do that. Like operating and maintaining a cluster of Lightning nodes is difficult from a technical perspective, but it seems like they've got that figured out. Lightning on Cash App is pretty smooth. So I'd like to see them start to get Square involved. So that's what's making me bullish. And then a lot of people don't know Block 2 also owns Tidal. So I'd love to be able to like pay an artist over Lightning directly on Tidal. Like I'm listening to, you know, Ye. I know you're a big Ye guy. I'm listening to Ye on Tidal. I'd like to be able to stream the guy some sats in real time. So let's see it, Jack. Let's get it going.
Yeah, shout out Ye, my dog, dude. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see kind of how Dorsey, like, I mean, obviously he's been one of the bigger names in the Bitcoin space for some time, right? He's been funding a lot of things. He funded like something with Jay-Z to, you know, for like kids in poverty. And I think Jay-Z's like old neighborhood. I don't know if it was in Brooklyn specifically. I don't know. I don't know the boroughs of New York very well. But yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like he's going to be, you know, kind of at the forefront, whether it's helping fund a lot of these projects or, you know, just helping build some of it, whether it's getting a right team, Square, obviously, or what, I guess it's Block now with Square, Cash App, all the different kind of arms of it. And, you know, they've been quietly making a Bitcoin hardware wallet. I don't know if you've seen that, but they're starting to do that and get something around Bitcoin mining as well. But they've been kind of quiet about it. So I'm kind of wondering what's going on there. Have you seen the hardware wallet yet?
Yeah, they refused me access, early access. I signed up. They wouldn't let me do it. I think I know why, but they wouldn't let me do it. So I've seen it. It looks pretty nifty. Here's the thing. I don't care what these things look like. I just need them to be able to sign transactions. So like this new cold card, I like cold card. I've got a bunch of them, including some decoys that are just kind of laying around. But there's a new one that's got a bunch of buttons and stuff on them. Like, I don't think I really need this, but whatever. They're doing great. They're doing great stuff. So keep it up, cold card. But here's one thing about Block. Like, so Block is Cash App, Square, Tidal, Spiral. And now their new hardware wallet is called BitKey. So they've got a bunch of and then they've got XYZ, or not XYZ, TBD. They've got a number of different entities and they're all kind of doing different things. There's a great flow chart on from their last investors meeting that I encourage people to find. But the one thing that makes me a little hesitant about this is, remember, they came out pretty bullish on creating their own mining hardware too. And they wanted it all to be vertically integrated. I remember Jack had a series of tweets talking about how they wanted to do all of the silicon in house and they wanted to make a miner that could sit in your living room and it wouldn't be hot and loud. And then like maybe 2 months later, they announced that they were going to just get their silicon from Intel. And Intel's pulled the plug on that entire project. So, you know, that's one thing that kind of has me a little bit hesitant about Block's commitment to this stuff. And I think having Dorsey more involved personally in the company would be great, because there was also a back and forth. I don't know if you saw it or not, but our mutual friend, Brian Harrington, kind of called Jack out on Twitter. Jack had said something about, I think it was regarding Coinbase implementing Lightning. Man, I don't want to ruin it, but Brian called Jack out a bit and said, hey, you can't even, like, you're not even issuing Lightning or on-chain invoices from Square terminals. Like, why don't you focus on this instead of calling out Brian Armstrong about Lightning or whatever it was? And Jack responded and said, yeah, good point. We need to get that figured out. So I'm hoping that having Dorsey there in person, kind of leading the way, is going to help actually get some of these things done, because I think that's what you need. You need the person with the vision to actually make sure that you're driving towards it. A lot of these big companies, Block's a pretty big company, you run the risk of them getting to be basically like tech companies where you've got project managers that are leading engineers and they're not fully bought in to Bitcoin. Like, I think if you want to really be a Bitcoin company, you have to have, from the top down, you have to have Bitcoiners, like all the way from leadership down to your engineers. So hopefully Dorsey can make that happen at Square. I've seen at Cash App, it's happened with like a small set of people at Cash App, and they've got their own teams. So hopefully that can get going at Square too, and they can make some cool shit.
Yeah, and I mean, if that were to happen, right? I mean, that would be probably make the biggest waves because, I mean, Dorsey, Square, Block, that's like one of the bigger companies we got here, right? I mean, I guess in the Bitcoin space, it's one of the more, I would say, I guess, well-known normie kind of companies that, you know, the average person has heard of Cash App before or has seen a Square terminal, has interacted with that. Maybe they don't know the inner workings of the entire company, but they're at least like, I mean, they probably interacted with a Square terminal at least once or twice in their entire life. Maybe they've heard of Cash App because, I mean, obviously Venmo is probably the bigger name when it comes to sending money from person to person, but Cash App is definitely that number two. And so, I mean, I think that would be something that would make a lot of waves and have people kind of wake up to, you know, it's another touch point, right? I mean, it takes, in my opinion, it takes like, you know, like 7 or 8 touch points for somebody to kind of get plugged in there. So I think, you know, the more that people hear Bitcoin, hear people implement Bitcoin transactions, hear people implement Bitcoin functionality, the more people will kind of look into it. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I agree with Brian Harrington that Square definitely needs to do that. And it's been kind of like a long time coming. I don't know how easy it is. I feel like it should be fairly simple to upload the API and just kind of figure that out with like, you know, either like Ibex Pay. I mean, even if they don't want to do it themselves, there's other companies out there that have, you know, the ability and capability to be like that pay server, right? So, I mean, I feel like it shouldn't be too much to chew off.
Well, I think they own a lot of their own infrastructure and they take a lot of pride in that, but they already have the LDK. Like I said, Lightning's already implemented on Cash App. It's a pretty smooth experience. I've used it a few times. Here's what you don't want though. You don't want to issue Lightning invoices and then tell your customers, oh, you need like this other app to be able to pay this thing. And then you give them a Bitcoin wallet app, right? Now you can already do it out of Cash App. So that's great. But what would be even better is if you could say like, hey, I want to pay you out of my cash. Like I want to do Lightning invoice instead of just like a Cash App invoice. And then I want to pay you out of my cash holdings, not my Bitcoin holdings. All right. Like you just want to give them as much choice as possible. So I pulled up my phone. I've got an entire little subfolder of like payment apps, Cash App, Venmo, Strike, Zelle. And then I've got a green wallet. I don't want 5 payment apps on my phone. I want a single payment app. And I want to be, if you want to use Venmo, you use Venmo. I want to use Cash App. I should be able to send you money from Cash App to Venmo. And the only way that we're going to be able to do that is by using some protocol that we both agree is a good protocol, a trustworthy protocol. We've got Lightning. Like we should be able to do this. This is insane. I shouldn't need 6 different payment apps on my phone. So this is what I want to see happen. And I like, there's a bunch of people on Bitcoin Twitter that would say, oh, that's not true Bitcoin adoption. That's not true Lightning adoption because you're doing it for cash payments. Dude, get people as much off of the fiat system, as much off the fiat rails as we can, and then just show them the usefulness of the protocol. You know me, you give me a hard time about this all the time. Like I'm a Bitcoin with a capital B. I'm a protocol guy. Like I like to think of it as email. Like if I wanted to send you an email and I'm on Gmail and you're on Proton, like we can still send each other emails. We don't both need a Gmail. We both don't need a Proton. Like we can choose whichever email server that we want and still use the email protocol. And I think if you pitched people Bitcoin that way, they'd be much more open to it. Because at the moment we're pitching people Bitcoin as fiat sucks. And it does. I agree with that. But I just think we're pitching it to people the wrong way. And so to see people like Dorsey get more involved in this and to try to kind of use Bitcoin under the hood and Lightning under the hood is, I think, a better approach to mass adoption.
Well, I mean, I think then you're not even really pitching Bitcoin at that point, right? You're pitching just like and Visa and MasterCard, like give this other, you know, payment rail where it's cheaper. You don't need like the third party, right? I mean, that essentially like, I mean, I get that. And I think that that's kind of like a good intermediary, maybe an in-between kind of thing. But, you know, my problem is that we need it to be more efficient where like a normie has no idea what's going on in the background. Because I mean, we've kind of had a lot of these conversations offline, but it's at the end of the day, if you ask the average person, even like half the business owners, probably even more than half, if you ask them, like, how much do you pay to Visa and MasterCard every single year, every time somebody swipes a transaction, like, I would say probably 60, 70% of business owners have no idea. And then 99% of people outside of Bitcoin probably have no idea. And the only people that do have an idea are probably the ones that work at Visa and MasterCard, you know, and like see those transactions coming in. So, you know, I think if we could somehow implement it where, you know, where, like, I mean, I know Strike partnered with Visa, and I've been kind of like out, a little outspoken with that on like on Twitter, maybe, and like some of these other companies are partnered with, you know, like, I mean, Cash App has a Visa card and or is it MasterCard? Either way, they partner with these. Yeah, they partnered with these, like, I guess, big box, you know, banking. I don't even know what we call them, but you get what I'm saying here. These companies that are going to take the 3% fee regardless, whether or not like Strike is, you know, negotiating a 2% or whatever it is, or donating some of that 3% fee to something else, it doesn't matter. The business owner is still losing that 3%, right? And so, you know, if we're able to implement it where Normie can take out their credit card or a card that is similar to, you know, the current system, or even, you know, do it Apple Pay, right? Like double tap on the side of your phone and it pulls up a Strike wallet. And then you tap it to the current terminal and you don't have to worry about what the hell is going on, just that there's money in your account, whether that's sats or dollars or whatever. If you could implement that, normies would use Bitcoin and over, or, you know, make transactions over Lightning like nobody's business. They wouldn't even fucking care. And as long as they're just like, as long as it works and it takes less time. But the problem I think we have right now with, like, you know, a lot of the solutions that you lined out, whether it's Square implementing, you know, Lightning term or Lightning, you know, QR code that you have to scan, is, you know, I have to go pull out my phone, take out maybe the Face ID or put in the little passcode on my phone, open an app, go to the app, then click around somewhere in that app to say send, then scan the QR code. Then it takes a couple seconds. To the average person that's like sitting here at the front of a Walmart waiting to go pay, and there's like a line full of people back there, they're not going to want to do that rather than just pull out their wallet, pull out their card and just tap it, you know? So I think the next step in Bitcoin payments is not only like merchants, like giving it easier access, but it's also on the consumer side of things where it's just making it easy for the normies to just go and like do it, you know, essentially, because like maybe you and I will pay in Bitcoin and like, you know, the Bitcoiners, like the hardcore ones, will think it's cool. But I mean, like a country like El Salvador where it's legal tender, I hear like maybe like 10% of people pay in that. I mean, which is an astronomical number compared to probably less than 1% of transactions here in the US. But still, I mean, like, you know, 10% in a country that made it legal tender, you know, I think that there could be some more headway. And, you know, the headway that I just lined out, or the solution that I just lined out there, I don't know how easy of an engineering solution that is. But, you know, I think that that's kind of the next step of where we're at right now.
Yeah, the convenience factor's massive from the consumer standpoint. This is the difficult part. Like, that's the trade-off. Okay, well, do you want your money to be protected? Yes or no? If yes, then okay, there's some steps that you might have to take. Like, do you want to be your own bank? Yes or no? Yes, I want to be my own bank. All right, well, then you're going to have to learn how to have cold storage. You're going to have to understand all this stuff. You're going to maybe have to run your own node. It's difficult. And a lot of people just aren't going to do it. So how do you get those people? I don't know. It's a good question, but you're right. The convenience factor is huge on the consumer side. And the engineering task is technically difficult, but it's also like, I think it's going to require us to almost rethink design and rethink product development, because it's the convenience factor isn't there today. It's just not.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, like, don't mind. So when I go to a Square terminal, I always pay with Cash App, just because I know from the merchant side, like, they save those percentages. Also, they, like, the merchants should just be, a lot of them pass that 3.5-4% Visa fee onto their customers. And I don't know, that's typically, that should only be calculated like ahead of time, or like after the fact, after it's detected that you're paying with Visa. I think sometimes they just apply it beforehand and say, you know, unless you're paying with cash, there's a 4% charge just to account for Visa. So I don't know. I have to go to some of my favorite spots here in town that have Square terminals and see if that's included ahead of the time, even if I pay with Cash App.
Well, I don't think it's like they're not going to itemize a receipt and say that. I think it just might be like something that's in the background that they, you know.
I think some have to. I think in certain states you have to itemize it because I have receipts now that say it.
Oh, shit. He's got the receipts.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, that my favorite Mexican place here in town is like it says there's, first of all, there's signs like around the restaurant that say if you pay with a Visa card, we're going to charge you a 4.5% fee. And then on the receipt, it says it. But there's also, I think there's like pretty strict rules here about what they have to put on the receipt. So like every tax that's charged is on the receipt and they're separated. This like county tax, sales tax, like whatever, every single tax is there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's different from state to state because I don't think I've ever seen that. But I've also seen, you know, I've seen like local spots say like if you pay for with cash, it's less, like that kind of thing. Opposed to card and whatnot. But, you know, for all the hardcore Green Candle fans that have made it this far in this episode, we got to revisit what we talked about at the beginning, how, you know, Wayfaring got shit canned from Green Candle, dude. So I don't know, like, I don't know how deep you want to go into this, but what's next for Wayfaring? Because like, where have you been? I don't know if you want to go deep into that or whatnot, but I'll leave it kind of open-ended for you. And yeah, man, let's dive into it. Why Wayfaring get shit canned, kicked to the curb, thrown off the ledge, like whatever you want to say, from Green Candle.
Look, I started this company,
bullshit.
I started this company. I built this company into what it is today. Brick by brick, I've constantly been a consultant to Brandon. Everything he does goes through me, except the stupid shit. He does that on his own. No, man. Yeah. I when did we start this? Over a year ago, right?
No, dude, over two. At April 21 was when we started like the Twitter account officially.
Dude, it's, I can't believe it's October of 2023 already. Yeah. So we started in 2021.
2.5 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So it was a long time ago. So we started 2.5 years ago. At the time, it was just a newsletter. We started messing around with some video stuff and then. It was basically a newsletter in spaces, right? That was it.
Yeah. So I mean, I'll give you credit here. So like we basically started that, the newsletter, whatnot. We reached out to the Bitcoin and blockchain conference here in Tampa just because it was local. They basically gave us a low-end sponsorship for the price of our tickets. We went there. That was kind of our first like video content thing where we were kind of doing that around the conference. And you started the podcast kind of by yourself a little bit, doing some YouTube stuff, and you gave me the push to go and do that more full time. So I'll give you credit for that. You did help in that aspect for sure. You didn't help in very many things, but you did give me that push.
There it is, dude. I'm waiting for royalties. I just know people love video content, and I had a personal YouTube channel that had helped me out when I was kind of getting out of school, getting into my first job. So, and then also people just love video, and YouTube is massive. It consumes more time from people than any other social media app. So yeah, it's kind of a no brainer, but yeah. And then I got a job with a Bitcoin company and kind of had some rules around what I was allowed to talk about publicly. So ended up letting Brandon go. Didn't want to hold him back just because, you know, I saw Green Candle's growing quite a bit, and we had gotten connected to like a few other pretty big podcasters in the space and content creators in the space. And so I rendered my resignation. Is that how you say that? I rendered my resignation, and Brandon begged me not to go, but wasn't able to provide the kind of pay that I needed to stay. So I jumped ship.
Kicked his ass to the curb, man. I kicked his ass to the curb. All right. Well, now you've kind of gone on CBP a couple times. So shout out to the boys over there, Joey and Len. But what's next for Wayfaring, dude? What do you got on the docket? I don't know if you want to kind of dive into too much with that, but yeah, man, what's next?
To be honest, like I've been I don't know. I'm still looking. I've got some personal anecdotal stories from the job market because I am currently in search of a job. So I've been doing that, but I also have this house and it's been a fixer upper. So most of my time has been focused on just fixing up the house, spending time with my family. I told you before the episode, like I'm barely on Twitter anymore, so I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on really. But yeah, we'll see. I think things are starting to kind of round into shape around the house. So probably maybe try to get more into content. But yeah, I don't know. Nothing major planned through the end of the year. I'd like to start going to a few more conferences. I know you were just at Pacific Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, I was there. I'm going to Adopting here in another, I guess, couple weeks or months. Basically like a month away. I'll be in El Salvador from November 5th to 11th. I booked my ticket actually right before we hopped on here. So if you want a ticket, use promo code GreenCandle, all caps. There we go. Shameless plug. 10% off. Save you some sats.
Nice.
Yeah, dude. And so, I mean, I don't know, maybe come down to El Salvador with me. We'll take some, I got a plug here. I'm going to do some surfing lessons and yeah, man, just figure out everything that's going on in El Salvador.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I know like our mutual friend Gandalf too is kind of globetrotting conference to conference and that seems fun. So yeah, it might be a good opportunity to get out and explore, but yeah, I need to unfortunately find another fiat mining gig to fund it. But c'est la vie.
Yeah, that's life, brother. All right, well, I'll leave everybody I'll leave you to give yourself a shameless plug if you're not on Twitter that much. Where can people find you? Maybe your YouTube channel. I don't know, what do you want to plug, man?
Yeah, just I guess go on Twitter. I need to start being more active on Twitter and Noster. It's mostly just memes for me, not a ton of hot takes. So if you're into good memes, give me a follow. It's wayfaring_BTCer. Yeah, I think it's a solid account. I mean, only 740 followers. I think that's a travesty, in my opinion.
My personal has more than that. And the only thing I tweet from my personal these days is just Justin Fields takes. So
Justin Fields is a joke. Follow my memes. They're amazing. Yeah, I'm actually like scrolling through my profile page for the first time in a while, and it's pretty good takes here. So,
oh my God, relax. All right, man. Well, Wayfaring, thanks so much for hopping on. We brought him back for just one episode, but then, you know, maybe he's going to retire a Green Candle former employee, right? We signed him for a 1-day contract and then we're letting him loose.
Oh, I should have put up, well, there's nowhere really to put it behind me, but I still have our poster, our friends and enemies poster for the phrase that we made up.
Yeah, that we made up and some other podcast decided to steal it from us. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, you just check the receipts. We've been doing it for a long time, but all right, Wayfaring man, I appreciate it and much love, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Brandon.